All right, so we're diving into this story, right? Clemens Linschinger, guy wants to give some lectures.
At the Vienna Adult Education Center, VHS Wien.
Yeah, VHS Wien. Sounds harmless enough, right? But here's the catch. He wants to talk about atheism.
And suddenly, it's a whole thing.
A whole ordeal. Mm. Potential censorship, the works.
And what makes it really interesting is we're getting this straight from the source. Linschinger's blog. His personal account.
His perspective. And it's not like he's, you know, some random guy ranting on the internet.
Not at all.
This is a jurist. Published author.
Experienced lecturer. He's given talks all over.
Exactly. So it's even more strange when you hear about the roadblocks he hit.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect this kind of pushback. Especially not from...
VHS Wien.
Yeah. So the story goes like this. Linschinger, he gets the green light to give 4 lectures.
On atheism. This is what we're talking about, atheism.
Right, right. So 7 months go by, everything's quiet, and then bam, out of the blue.
What happens?
He gets this message from a culture officer, quote unquote. Linschinger actually puts that in quotes in his blog post, culture officer.
Okay. A culture officer tells him.
That he's not qualified to give these lectures.
Wait, hold on. Not qualified? To talk about atheism, what does that even mean?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Because how do you... It's not like there's some official certification program.
You are now a certified atheist.
Exactly. It's not like becoming a doctor or lawyer where there's a board and exams and all that.
So how can you be unqualified to talk about atheism?
And to make it even more strange, VHS Wien, they decide to replace Linschinger with a theologian.
You're kidding. So to be clear, they're swapping out the atheist... for a theologian to talk about atheism.
Yep, that's the situation.
I mean, I can already see where this is going.
Yeah.
Talk about a recipe for a very specific perspective.
And that's exactly Linschinger's point. He's saying, look, theologians, they come at this whole thing with a certain set of beliefs.
Which by definition are coming from, you know, a theological perspective.
Exactly. So it's not exactly the most neutral playing field, let's say, which isn't to say that a theologian can't be objective.
Right. Of course. It's just if we're talking about exploring atheism, getting into the nitty gritty of it.
Shouldn't you, you know, maybe hear from someone who actually identifies as an atheist?
Right. Someone who lives and breathes that experience.
That's Linschinger's argument.
So what'd he do? I mean, did he just give up?
Oh, no. This is where it gets really interesting. He actually tries to find a compromise. He says, okay, how about this? I'll do a public reading of my book.
He's got a book on this.
Yeah, on atheism and death. He figured it'd be lower key, you know,
yeah.
Less formal, less likely to cause problems.
Makes sense. So did they go for it?
Rejected. The culture officer, those quotes, again, says it doesn't fit their educational mission.
Hold on. They're telling him he can't do a book reading about atheism, but they're okay with other people talking about death.
It's even more specific than that. They've got someone lined up to talk about memento mori, death awareness. And then there's that theologian who's also down to discuss end-of-life issues, like euthanasia.
And Linschinger's not allowed to talk about death from an atheist viewpoint.
And this is where his legal background comes in handy. He points out the inconsistency. He's a jurist, right? Studied law. And they're telling him he's not qualified to discuss death.
But the theologian, who might not be a legal expert...
can talk about the ins and outs of euthanasia, legally speaking.
Okay, yeah. I see where he's coming from. Mm. That's a bit of a double standard, isn't it?
It makes you wonder, are they really okay with discussing death in general, or just when it's framed within a religious context?
Because it sounds like they're totally fine with it as long as there's some kind of spiritual angle.
It's a good question. And keep in mind, at this point, Linschinger's gone through all the proper channels. He's contacted the management at VHS Wien, even the board, trying to work this out.
Trying to get them to stick to their word. They agreed to this months ago.
Exactly. And what does he get? Silence.
No response.
Nothing. Which, you know, speaks volumes. It's only when he takes it up a notch, reaches out to the city council member who oversees VHS Wien, that things start moving.
So we've got someone with a little authority stepping in now. What happens next?
Things change quickly. The director of VHS Urania, which is part of the whole VHS Wien system, he personally reaches out to Linschinger, apologizes, says his lectures are back on.
Well, that's something, but it sounds like he had to climb a mountain to get there.
It's a victory, sure, But it leaves a bit of a bad taste in your mouth, doesn't it?
It does, having to jump through all those hoops just to get them to honor their initial agreement. And there's another layer to this too, right? Something about the Social Democratic Party.
Yeah, the SPA, Lynchinger is really disappointed with them. You'd think a party that leans towards secularism would be a bit more understanding of his situation.
Right. You'd think they'd be on his side. So what's going on there? What's got him so fired up about the SBO?
Well, for Lynchinger, it gets at a much bigger issue. Like, are non-religious voices even being considered in Austrian society?
Okay, so this is about way more than just his lectures now.
Yeah.
This is getting interesting. Tell me more. So this SBO thing, it's not just about Lynchinger, right?
No, not at all. He sees this as part of a bigger pattern. Like, are non-religious people even being considered in these conversations?
By the SBO, you mean?
Yeah. He brings up the Austrian Broadcasting Corporation, their version of, like, public TV. The SBO made a big deal about their audience council.
Okay. What about it?
They wanted more representation, right? Which, on the surface, sounds good.
Sure. Diversity, all that.
Exactly. But Lynchinger says they were so busy focusing on certain groups that they completely missed one.
Which is?
Non-religious viewpoints.
Yeah.
Totally left out of the equation. And this is in a country where a significant portion of the population identifies as non-religious.
Like, how significant are we talking?
Especially in Vienna. Almost half, he says.
Wow. Okay, that's not insignificant. I mean, good luck talking about representation when you're ignoring half the population.
Exactly. And it's not just a one-off thing either. He points to another example, the Vienna City Council. They set up this religious council.
So every faith is represented.
All the denominations, different faiths, they've got a seat at the table.
There's always a but.
No representation for non-religious people at all. Not even like one token spot. And this, to me, this is what Lynchinger really nails. It's like this unconscious bias.
It's like they're trying to be inclusive, but the assumption is still that belief automatically equals religion.
Right. Like, those are the only two options. And that's what's got him so riled up. Even after his own lectures get reinstated, he wants people to see this other part of society, this growing group that's constantly being overlooked.
I remember that line from his blog. He says, "The Christian-dominated era is coming to an end."
And we, the non-confessional, secular humanists, Pastafarians, and many others, are ready to assume social responsibility.
Yeah, it's a powerful statement. He's not asking anymore. He's saying, we're here. Get used to it.
Bold move, calling out a major political party like that. He doesn't stop there. He actually challenges all the political parties. He says if they keep ignoring the non-religious, they'll just create their own representation.
Wow. He's talking about a whole political shift.
Exactly. It's not just about atheism anymore. It's about how power works, how representation works, and how those things need to change as society changes.
It's like that saying, right? First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. Sounds like lynching or somewhere between ignore and laugh at you.
Yeah.
But he's ready to go all the way.
And that's what makes this whole thing so interesting. Because we think about progress as this straight line, but sometimes it takes people like Lynchinger.
Mm.
People willing to stand up and make some noise. That's how you get things moving.
Sometimes you got to be the squeaky wheel. Right, get the grease. And he's definitely squeaking. So we've got individual versus the institution, the whole changing landscape of belief, and now a possible political shakeup.
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Where do we go from here? But I think the real heart of this whole deep dive is less about the specifics of what happened to Lynchinger and more about the questions it raises.
Like what? Give me the big existential questions.
Well, how do we define expertise? Authority? Especially with something like atheism where there aren't really formal institutions or credentials.
It's not like you get your PhD in atheism, right?
Right. But it gets even deeper than that. Oh. Because we're so used to looking at degrees, titles, certifications, that sometimes we miss the value of lived experience.
He actually makes a really good analogy about this. He basically said, imagine telling a Jewish person they couldn't lecture on Jewish ethics.
Okay, I see where you're going with this.
Because the institution would rather have, like, an imam who'd study Judaism.
As part of their religious tradition, yeah. It really highlights how bizarre that line of thinking is when you apply it to other contexts.
It makes you think twice about whose perspective we value. You know, and whose we just dismiss without even realizing it.
It's like there's this hierarchy of knowledge, right? Where lived experience doesn't quite stack up against a degree or a title.
Even when the topic is fundamentally about that lived experience.
Exactly. Like you can read all the books in the world, but sometimes it's the person who's actually lived it who can offer the most insight.
It's almost like these institutions, they're stuck in the old way of thinking. Like they haven't caught up with how much the world is changing.
Right, becoming more secular, questioning those traditional structures of authority.
So where does that leave us? What do we do with all of this?
Well, it starts with being aware of it, right? Like taking a step back and asking ourselves, what are my own biases? Because we all have them.
And who are we not hearing from? And why?
Yeah, whose voices are missing from the conversation? And how can we create space for them?
And maybe, on a practical level, being a little less impressed with titles and credentials.
Yeah.
Just because someone has a PhD after their name doesn't automatically mean they have all the answers.
Absolutely. I mean, expertise can come from anywhere. Sometimes the most valuable insights come from the people who've lived through something, not just studied it.
That's what's so important about Lynn Shinger's story, I think. It reminds us that progress isn't always this nice, neat, straight line. Sometimes it takes a little friction, a little disruption, to really make things change.
He might have started out just wanting to give a few lectures, but he ended up sparking a much bigger conversation.
And we all need to be part of that conversation about representation, about inclusivity, and about challenging the status quo, even when it makes people uncomfortable. And that's what makes this whole deep dive so fascinating, right? It's not just a story. It's a call to action.
It really is. Leaves you with a lot to think about.
It does. Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive. We've gone from the halls of VHS Ween to some pretty big questions about belief, authority, and how society's changing right before our eyes.
The power of individual action, the importance of diverse voices, and the need to always be questioning our assumptions.
Hopefully this deep dive has given you some new perspectives to consider. What other areas of our lives could benefit from a little shaking up? Whose voices are we not hearing, and how can we create space for them?
Remember, change often starts with a single question, a moment of discomfort, a willingness to listen.
So keep asking those tough questions, keep those minds open, and keep diving deep. We'll see you next time.